Hello and welcome to the Day Zero update for April 19th, 2015. I'm Filippo DeNolfo.
I'm Patrick Meslin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Lee Lamb.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And this podcast keeps growing and growing. It's kind of becoming a thing now.
Yeah. It works.
Yeah. So, we got, quite a bit to talk about this week, mostly about Mortal Kombat. But before we get to that, let's get into what we're playing. Pat, you've been hitting the Final Fantasy again?
Yeah, I've been on Final Fantasy Record Keeper. I've seen pretty much everything there is to do with the main quest so far. Right now I'm mainly just leveling up characters and doing some of the dailies and things that they throw in. I also got in on the whole NHL playoff bracketology stuff. A group of us from a Colorado Avalanche Facebook group that I frequent have sort of gone in on a bracket tournament, and mine's going well so far, but there are a couple of snags. The main one being that I really need the Winnipeg Jets to just run the table from here. I can't have the Anaheim Ducks winning any more games. Mm-hmm. As far as the Capitals and Islanders, okay, so there goes that. New York Islanders just won in overtime, and so there's no way the Caps are going to finish them off in five games now. So maybe I had a little too much faith in Braden Holtby. Anyway, what have you been playing?
Defense Grid 2, I always play a few maps of that every week, and Mortal Kombat 10, which we'll get into more detail about a little bit later.
And your review's out now.
Yeah, my review is up on smashpad.com. If you want to go and check that out, you can do that. How about you, Brandon?
Mortal Kombat X, biatch. Also attempting Star Wars The Old Republic, and by attempting, I mean I'm trying to play it, but the latest patch is taking forever to load.
BioWare doesn't really have it all together when it comes to, like, getting the game to work properly. It is a janky game. It's a fun game, but it's janky.
Yeah, I got to play a little bit of it when, because when the game is loading, it's loaded a little bit, it'll let you do some stuff on Starter Worlds, and I got to do a little bit of that, and I liked it, but of course it was still kind of janky.
Yeah. So, what side are you playing? Empire or
Republic? The idea I was gonna be a Sith, but I was gonna join up with the Revanites. So, I'm basically going to be... here's the thing. I like Star Wars. I've always loved Star Wars.
I feel like there's a
but
coming. You can't
but
put
I've actually always.
There.
But I've always
no,
actually
that's,
preferred
that's my
the
job.
Expanded... I've actually always preferred the expanded universe material over the actual movies, even though I do like the movies.
Really?
I mean, obviously the original trilogy is good. You know, even the prequels had their moments. But I've always just preferred the expanded universe material. And the reason is because, unlike in the movies, the expanded universe material makes the sort of moral good and evil stuff between the Jedi and the Sith a lot grayer.
Yeah. There's definitely not that dividing line that's... Well, there's also in comparison to the regular stuff, like even if you discount the prequels, the amount of stuff available in the extended universe dwarfs the actual official movies by a factor of 15. You can get into those conundrums like the black and white. Like you'll actually, that might be something you enjoy with playing the Old Republic, because I play mainly Empire characters, which is ironic, because when I play regular RPGs, I am Christ-like with my decisions. Like, I am a paragon of goodness. But in this game, I'm I want to be mustache-twirling evil.
yeah.
But you do get a lot of options to sort of like, you'll get light side and dark side points, kind of like how the original Knights of the Old Republic were.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some grayers. The stories in the game are phenomenal. It's really kind of a shame that a chunk of the game really is not. But that's a different conversation overall. I will say this, though. If you're going to play a character, if you're going to play a Sith and you want to play a Jedi, play a Sith Sorcerer. They're the easiest to level. Melee, like I've played a lot of MMOs, and Star Wars is by far one of the worst that I've played, where melee classes are just invariably harder for no reason. Like playing a class with ranged abilities, you can just face roll a good chunk of the game. It's kind of ridiculous to the point even where they're in-game raids. Like a lot of people, when the newest expansion came out, which was Shadow of Revan, it came out last December. A lot of people re-rolled ranged characters because the in-game raids and like the hard modes and nightmare modes, if you're a melee, you just get whopped. It's bad. Whereas if you're somebody that can shoot lightning, you can just sit back and not worry about dying. It's really kind of frustrating. I realized that because I played a melee character all the way up to like 60, and I was like, now I can't get into anything because the way that people have been beating the content that BioWare has put out is they've just gone, BioWare didn't tune this at all for melee characters, so just don't play one.
Yeah. The reason I said I wanted to play a Sith but like end up joining the Revanites is that the cool thing about Darth Revan is that Revan really kind of threw a monkey wrench into the whole Jedi, Sith, good and evil dividing line.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the expanded universe, what Revan ended up doing is he decided that both the light side and the dark side had things worth working with. So it ends up creating this sort of gray area that normally doesn't happen. And, you know, let's to be perfectly honest, obviously the Sith being drawing on the dark side of the Force, they've done some pretty janky crap in the past, including, you know, the Empire and all that stuff. The Jedi don't exactly have clean hands either.
Yeah. Well, I would love to hear what you think after you've put some time into it, because I think the particularly the Empire stories and everything I think are great, and there's a lot of gray area to the game. The storytelling is actually by far the strongest point of the game. So far, every class that I've played, the stories have been very interesting. The problem really becomes so many of the worlds are really huge and there's not much in them. You spend a good deal of your time traveling. So if you can do that, it's fine. But it is one of those games, just like how there are other RPGs out there where you can deal with a lot of the other stuff just because the story is so good. Mm-hmm. And then especially like the other cool thing, at least as far as them placing it so far back into was, I think it's like 3,000 or 4,000 years in the past, is that there are Jedi and Sith everywhere. It's not like in the Star Wars movies, like where you had the prequels where there's a bunch and then they kill everyone. And then the regular trilogy, you just have like four, you know, like, you know.
Well, I mean, by the time of the regular trilogy, by the time of the regular trilogy, there's some things that have been instituted. Like, you know, if you know enough about the expanded universe, you know that Darth Bane came up with the whole concept of the rule of two, where there's only two Sith inside the Sith order at any given time. And of course, by the time of the regular trilogy, you know, Darth Palpatine, you know, Palpatine had all the other Jedi purged. So, but whatever. We need to let Theresa talk.
Wait, what? How did you say my name?
Sorry, I'm still kind of half asleep. Before you go on there, just so I will be being able to play more about Star Wars The Old Republic and be able to tell more as soon as this new patch finishes loading, and it's taking forever. So,
well, shoot me your name. We can play, you know, me and my wife play, so let me know.
All right. Okay, I will. All right. We're done.
Cool. Okay, I have been continuing on with Skyrim. I had started on the PS3, and then I ditched that and got an Alienware and started over. So thankfully, I wasn't too far in there, but I've been continuing with Skyrim. Mm-hmm. Pat got me into playing Trails in the Sky, and I'm only at the beginning of that because my kid keeps trying to tell me how to play. Yeah. I mean, that's great, right?
Yeah.
And of course, I think every time I podcast with you guys, yes, I've been playing Civ 5. Yes, I've been playing Civ Revolution 2 on iOS. And then it's been a weird week and I haven't been able to game as much as I'd like to. So I've been turning to the iPad for a little bit of fix, and I've been playing, and I shouldn't admit this, but I've been playing silly games like My Little Pony and Heyday. But there you go.
All right.
I guess a job done sometimes.
Yeah.
You can get Record Keeper on there, you know.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
putting
I
that
could.
Out there.
That's
it. Yeah, don't worry. Nobody's silently judging you.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm actually kind of, I don't know. I don't play games like that, but I do a lot on iOS and my iPad and stuff just out of necessity. So I know how that is.
Yeah.
That. And, well, I already kind of have an idea of what Lee's been playing, so we'll go into that.
Yeah, I've been playing the Old Republic and Hearthstone, and although everybody pronounces it Hearthstone, I know that's how Blizzard officially pronounces it, but they're wrong.
Yeah.
And of course, yeah, the Old Republic. I've been just kind of grinding through that, and it was funny. Like when I went and saw the trailer, I immediately it was like me and my wife were both like, "All right, time to go play Star Wars."
Yeah, yeah. That trailer is, it just does everything right, really, to get at least for people of a certain age.
Yeah, well, I just hope I've heard so many rumors about it, and I've tried to stay away from spoilers. I hope that we get to keep Luke and Leia and Han like throughout the whole trilogy. I hope they don't pull some like, I know they're gonna to pass the torch because these people are old, but at the same time, I hope it's not like. We have to kill all of the old characters in the first movie. Like, that would just be depressing.
Yeah.
And Harrison Ford needs to stop kicking his own ass on the set.
Dude, I saw, speaking of him, you know how he crashed his plane? And didn't he break his leg or whatever?
Oh, yeah, on and off the set.
I saw a picture. Like, there's a fake Harrison Ford Twitter account.
Oh, no.
And when he crashed his plane, somebody did a still of Indiana Jones where he's giving the thumbs up in that one plane in The Last Crusade with his dad. Like, that's like a perfect response. I almost wish he actually had done it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to Star Wars, so that's going to be really good. And
yes.
We don't have much time to wait, too. It's like the end of this year.
Oh. Yeah, it's December. Yeah. Like, that's something else that's great. Like, we get a teaser trailer of a movie that's actually going to come out.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, Batman, where it's like, yeah, here's a teaser trailer for Batman versus Superman, and it'll be out of, like, Christmas of next year.
Yeah. It's like, that doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense.
That's what sours me on hype in general, just companies, regardless of the medium, wanting to shove advertising in your face as something that you're not going to be able to enjoy for another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's something, too, that backfires for them because...
It created me.
No, I mean, like, you leave people with enough time either they forget about it or they obsess over what they want it to be. Like, going back to Star Wars, like, the prequels were not good. But I feel like... If Lucas had released those not too long, even 5 to 10 years after the original trilogy came out, people would probably look at them quite a bit more fondly. But because there was so much time and so much of that was built up, people just expected something that he definitely wouldn't have been able to deliver. And even now, what is it? It's a 15-year difference between the prequels and these new movies. But I also think people are really excited because J.J. Abrams is a competent director. Yeah. So, but I do think, like, I think about that with games, too, like, where they just announce something so early. Like, Crackdown on the Xbox One. Like, I loved Crackdown on the Xbox 360. But, like, we probably won't even see that until the middle of 2016 or Christmas of 2016. Like, it's great you put it out there, but what was the point?
Yeah. See, and I'm coming at this from a completely different angle because I've only seen episodes 2 and 3 and have no real guideline to operate from.
Are you joking? I am going to drive to your house and sit you down and make you watch these.
Pat, you're
done. Teresa, I have offended people with a list of movies I have not seen.
Oh my God.
Dude, we have to talk.
Here's the thing.
I get that a lot.
Let me tell you the truth. For the longest time, I was really ambivalent about Star Wars. You know, I saw the movies and I thought, eh, it's all right, big deal. And then a friend of mine finally convinced me to read the Thrawn trilogy by Timothy Zahn. And I was like, okay, I get it. finally get it.
Yeah.
And that pretty much just got me into the whole Star Wars expanded universe. It's good.
But no, I mean, I'm also the guy who kind of needs a guide to how to properly enjoy Kingdom Hearts when you didn't really grow up on Disney. So that,
yeah, know, but to be fair, Kingdom Hearts story is complete fucking nonsense. So
yeah,
so I would be no better off.
No, you wouldn't be any worse off either.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. The story may be complete nonsense, but let me tell you something. I actually did not have any idea that it would work as well as it did when that first game came out.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, don't get me wrong. It definitely works well, but it can be competent and still be complete nonsense.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
this
is a Tetsuya Nomura joint. I mean, anything he works on goes completely off rails at some point.
It's true, but I just think I've just spent the last what's it been 12-13 years under the assumption that one would get more out of Kingdom Hearts with a past rooted in being a Disney fan.
Well, you would, but you wouldn't be hurt by not having that either.
Cool.
And the good, thing is,
like, I was a Disney fan, but I actually, a big draw when the original one came out was the fact that I could have Final Fantasy characters interacting with each other. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Disney part ended up actually being quite good.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. You got to hand Tetsuya Nomura credit. He actually managed to take Mickey Mouse and turn him into a total badass.
Yeah, that was That was quite a feat that he managed to pull off there.
Seriously, if you play Kingdom Hearts 2, I mean, he's basically Ninja Mickey. And it's not that. He really actually, and it's not just that. He's actually pretty dramatic, too. Like, when he's like, they will pay for this. It's just... and it's coming
from... Throw a mouse.
So I've only got a mental image to work on from this, and so...
It's cool too because see in Kingdom Hearts he barely shows up at all, and then in Kingdom Hearts 2 he's in the game pretty much the whole time, and
I think would be cool because you're talking about that, like, Pat, tell me if this would work for you. Like, I know you're more into manga than anything else, but you know Disney owns Marvel now. What if you saw like Marvel characters showing up in Kingdom Hearts 3?
I would get something out of that.
Yeah. That would be, I think that, Matt, that would be actually pretty badass, like playing along with like the Avengers or have a Guardians of the Galaxy world.
Oh, yeah, Guardians.
Or Big Hero 6.
Yeah, Big Hero 6, any of the Pixar stuff. Yeah, I mean, Disney has so many worlds that they could do, but like when you factor in the Marvel stuff, man, they could do some really cool stuff. And then Marvel, and of course, again, you could do Star Wars too because Disney owns Star Wars.
Yeah, they own Star Wars now. So,
should we get to Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, let's move on to Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Let's keep talking about Disney and Star Wars. Mortal Kombat's a rubbish.
Yeah, so Mortal Kombat finally came out this week. It's been hotly anticipated since its reveal last year.
It's gotten pretty good reviews pretty much across the board too.
Yeah, it kind of has. I mean, I gave it 4.5 stars, and I've been playing it since Tuesday. I do have to thank Amazon for actually getting it to me on Tuesday. I don't know how they managed that, but they did.
Doesn't normally happen, does it?
No.
Oh, wow, really? I'd say they usually get me stuff early.
Yeah.
Canada.
Yeah, Canada.
Oh, right. Yeah. Canada.
So there's that. So what are your thoughts on the game, Brandon? Because apparently we're the only ones that actually played it.
Well, first of all, it's pretty much everything I wanted it to be, and a little bit more in some parts. First things first, plot-wise, as most people know, this game does take place like some 20 years or so after the original, after Mortal Kombat 9. The interesting thing, though, is that the story kind of bounces back and forth between what happened 20 years later and some things after, like, 2 years after
MK9.
After Mortal Kombat 9 happens. Bunch of characters are there. They do sort of explain in how something, how, you know, Liu Kang and Kung Lao and all those characters can, you know, be alive in Mortal Kombat X.
And it's not pretty.
And it's not quite.
No, it's not pretty.
Well, it's not. Yeah, it's not pretty. It's not quite as nonsensical as the kryptonite pills from Injustice Gods Among Us, so, you know, being that it takes 20 years later, you get characters like, you know, you get Cassie Cage, that's Sonya Blade and Johnny Cage's daughter, who she looks like Sonya Blade, but she's basically got Johnny Cage's attitude. Pure and simple.
It's an entire family. She's also, of snark.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's also got one of my favorite fatalities in the whole game, too.
Selfie.
I saw her brutality.
Yeah, the selfie.
She punches someone's, like, nuts and they explode.
She's got one where she basically gives, like, a... I can't remember if she basically takes off their jaw and then takes out her iPhone and does a selfie. Takes
That's
a selfie.
Awesome.
And then posts and it then to Instagram.
Well, they call it friendships, yeah. But it's at like an Instagram. And then all the other characters give their comments. You know, when her mother Sonya is like, Cassie, why is Kano in your friends list?
That's brilliant, dude. Oh my god.
Yeah. This game has a lot of those little touches in it. There's also Kung Jin, who is Kung Lao's, one of Kung Lao's descendant, not the modern Kung Lao, the original Kung Lao.
Yeah.
The one that beat Shang Tsung a century or so ago. Or I think it was, or was he killed by Goro? I can't remember. But
I think it was both.
Might have been. But I think he was killed by Goro and then Shang Tsung took his soul. And Kung Jin basically. He has a sort of sorcerer staff that also doubles as a archery bow. It looks weird, but it's actually pretty awesome. Let's see. There's a Takeshi Takeda, which is a God. What's his name?
Kenshi.
The blind guy's
Kenshi's
son, and he is awesome. He's got these two two sword whips that he's got attached to his wrists, and I'll just be honest, he can pretty much beat the living crap out of anyone in this whole game.
Is Cabal in this game?
Yeah, Cabal's in it. I don't know if he's playable yet or not.
Okay.
Let's see. Also, Jackie Briggs. That's Jax's
daughter.
Yeah. Daughter. And she's actually pretty awesome too. It's got a bunch of the new folks are in. So a lot of the old people are in the game too. You know, Johnny's there, Sonya's there, Jax is there.
Yeah. Sub-Zero, Scorpion, Kano,
Sub-Zero's. Yeah, some new characters. We've got Devorah, which is... Well, first of all, you got to talk about Kotal Kahn. Kotal Kahn is the new emperor of Outworld.
Yeah,
Kotal Kahn sounds like a sex position.
Yeah. he's actually basically his people were heavily influential on the they were part of a dimension that was invaded by Shao Kahn, and they're actually very they have a very sort of Aztec style to their character. In fact, in the universe's lore, he actually managed to make his way to Earthrealm for a while and became one of the gods in the Aztec pantheon. But basically, he ends up becoming... What happens is that after Shao Kahn dies, his successor ends up being Melina. And Melina, of course, being a complete psychopath, they ended up overthrowing her, and Kotal Kahn took her place. Kotal Kahn's entourage includes Ermac. Everybody remembers Ermac.
Yeah.
He was the... there's a new character named Devorah, who is basically a... Really, I just can say she's the insect lady.
Yeah.
She talks and she talks about herself in plurals. Her whole series of attacks is basically insect-based. She's basically just walking fetish fuel, let's be honest. And then there's Aaron Black. And Aaron Black is basically a cowboy ninja.
Yeah.
But he is awesome. He is an awesome cowboy ninja. Like, and I'll go to the one of the things about this game is that all the characters have three different styles.
Yeah, I was going to
that you can play
that.
As. And I'll use Aaron Black as an example. There's his regular style. His regular standard style you go with, it revolves around his two six shooters. And when I say six shooters, I mean they are straight up like old school Colt Dragoon revolvers, the ones that, you know, Wild Bill Hickok used to use. And there's also, he's got another one called the Marksman, which is based around a repeater rifle that he carries in. And, you know, it's like an old school Civil War era repeater rifle. Like the one that, you know, Ash uses at the end of Army of Darkness.
Yes.
And then finally, he has what's known as the Outlaw style, which is where he uses an old school, he uses a scavenged, like, Outworld double blade.
Yeah.
And basically, all the characters in this game have those three styles. And you can use them, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's kind of nice how they implemented this, because each character has a basic set of moves that that are common across all three variants. You know, each variant has a few different moves that that are unique to them. So, like, for instance, Cassie, in her brawler style, she gets MMA takedowns and all kinds of other fun stuff that can change how you play her.
Yep.
So it's a little more profound than just like grooves in Capcom versus SNK.
It's definitely like, more substantial than that.
Okay, yeah, because I know the grooves in like those kinds of games it made a difference, but not too much. So
yeah.
So, but, and remember, you don't switch between them. You get you choose one style before it starts, and then you play the whole match with them.
Yeah.
Let's see, some other stuff. I haven't finished the story mode yet, obviously, but...
I have, so I won't say anything.
Yeah, I watched it on YouTube.
Let's see. The crypt is back.
I really like how they did the crypt in this
world. Yeah, they basically turned the crypt into sort of like a crude first-person dungeon crawler.
Yeah.
In the way they made it.
Yeah. Hate those jump scares though. Just
let me ask you guys a question since you're talking about the crypt, if you don't mind, not to interrupt. But sure. I assume it's just kind of like how they've done the crypt in the previous games, except, you know, I know they've done some tweaks. What I'm curious about though is that I ended up reading something the other day that basically said like that day one patch drop the amount of coins or combat coins or whatever the hell they call them substantially compared to what they were for like pre-release. Now, since you guys have had time with the game, like, do you feel like unlocking things and stuff like that is really like, is it a chore? Or because one of the things that I had read is people were saying that a big reason that the coins in the And basically in the review copies that went out, the reason that they gave a lot more was because they wanted to give the reviewers the full picture. But I haven't seen any review outlets really comment on the difference. So I was curious if it felt grindy to you guys at all, or, you know, because there's so much of the monetization. You can't really talk about this game without the monetization angle. So I was curious how that part was for you guys, at least initially. Because I know that's something that they want to have, you know, they want to keep a long tail with it. But at the same time, is it frustrating, or does it feel right? What is it like?
Well, I don't.
I didn't really notice any difference.
Yeah, well, I don't really have a problem with it because it's it basically pretty much whatever mode you're playing in, you're going to be getting coins. Plus, yeah. The entire faction war, there's going to be events and stuff there, so you'll end up getting coins that way. If you finish off the story, you're pretty much finishing the story with about 30,000 or some coins, which is enough to unlock a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I mean, but there's so much content in this game. Pretty much any mode you play, you're going to get a bunch of coins.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a big deal to me.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But, Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat X, freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's for me. It's the details, just the amount of attention to detail that NetherRealm has put into this game. Little things like, you know, the UI, for instance, is just subtle. It's just there. It doesn't take up a lot of space, but it gives you the information you need without being overly obtrusive.
Right.
Yeah. There's that. What else did I really dig about the game? Well.
How about the fact that you can pick up and throw an old lady at someone?
Yeah. yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, there's some injustice-like interactables.
Yeah.
And for some reason, in the Outworld Marketplace stage, there's just this old lady. She just kind of wanders into the fighting stage, and you can totally just pick her up and... You even get an achievement for it.
Yeah. It's just wow. it's one of those things. But yeah,
the thing. And before we do, the fatalities in this game, man, damn, they are intense.
Yeah, I said in my review they're kind of walking the line between horrifying and hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So well, that actually makes me hearing that actually makes me happy because I felt like the stuff in 9 was really sort of just horrifying. Whereas I always found like they'd always done a good mix between something comical and just kind of gruesome.
Yeah.
And you know we talked about that on the previously you know the last podcast. So I'm hoping that that really sounds good because.
Well, let me give you
saw somebody in half. That really got to me, man.
Well, let me give you another good example. Aaron Black has a fatality where one of the things Aaron Black has is these sand bombs that he rolls on the ground and they blow up and they're sand bombs basically. Well, one of the things he does in this game, one of his fatalities is he takes out his six shooter. He blows a hole in the opponent's stomach. Then he shoves one of the sand bombs in there, the sand bombs explode, and then they get so filled up with sand that their eyes, ears, teeth, you know, just pop out and just sand's flowing out of them. It's actually pretty funny when you see it.
See, I looked at MK9's fatalities as being kind of almost a throwback to the first game, because the first game, we'd never seen anything like that before. And you see that stuff for the first time, and it's not so much awesome as it is a little bit unsettling. And I think with MK9, they went back to that, and not to the point where, I don't know, I didn't think any of it was actually what you might call egregious, but it definitely went back to that and managed to tap into that same energy as what you found in the first game. And there is definitely a little bit of that going on in MK10 as well.
Yeah, there is.
Ermac, that is all.
Yeah, Ermac is creepy. I actually pre-ordered this game, so I actually got Goro.
Oh, that one is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, Goro's... Yeah. I actually, the thing was, though, I only entered in the code last night, so I actually haven't gotten to play Goro yet, but yeah.
Yeah, he's fun. He is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weird thing about, yeah, I should actually touch on this, because Goro was apparently supposed to be a pre-order only character, but he was in my retail copy that I ordered after launch.
Was it just a code in the?
It was just a card in the case.
So. Oh yeah, that's probably just one of those things. Batman did the same thing where they said with Arkham City, where they're like, "Yeah, pre-order and you get Catwoman." Well, yeah, it was just a code in the box.
Yeah,
day one edition.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. I guess they'll probably take that out at some point, but for now, you know, any copy that you buy will have Goro already in there.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, Mortal Kombat 10, we really like it.
Yeah.
So you had a few things to say, Phil, about the Fatality Input DLC?
Yeah, that I've kind of calmed down a little bit about that, because I really didn't like that you can, you know, buy Easy Fatality DLC.
Oh, you started a petition.
Yeah, I closed that. It's like, you know, okay. I'm mellowed out a bit. So there's that. But what bothered me is, like, it's charging for basically an easy mechanic. It's charging for assists.
Yeah. And the thing is, the fatalities in this game actually aren't that hard to pull off.
Yeah, I said that. They're,
fatalities in general aren't hard to pull off. Like, this is, like, even the very first Sub-Zero, like, when arcade controllers were shit. Even, like, back in the day when you couldn't depend on inputs or anything, forward, down, forward, high punch, that's not hard.
No.
Holding block and hitting up, up, high punch, not hard. So,
unless
yeah.
some asshole spilled a double gulp all over the cabinet, then you're not going to be doing that. But
yeah.
And that, right. Like, that did happen.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are a lot of people that are like, I don't care because, you know, it is just... you know, if somebody wants to pay for it so I guess they can hit a button to make it easier, I mean, I guess that's fine. But at the same time, like, I don't like the monetization of this kind of stuff. And unfortunately, I feel like Warner Brothers is sort of like leading the pack on this shit. Like, they did it where they put Catwoman essentially behind a paywall if you didn't have the code from it. Then BioWare did it with one of the characters from Mass Effect 3. And then now, like, you have something like this that doesn't affect the gameplay, so it's not as egregious. But at the same time, it still feels, at least to me, it still just feels kind of scummy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I could almost say, like, oh, well, it would make sense if there, like, if you wanted to take it from the sense that there are maybe people that are mobility challenged or that have certain things where playing a game is more difficult, having this kind of input option for them would be fantastic. But that wasn't why this was done. This was just done specifically so they could earn $5 more on people that didn't want to do fatalities, which I guess if you're stupid enough to give them that money, then that's on you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, even having that kind of option out there, I feel is just like kind of like greasing up the slopes to have somebody else do something really stupid. Like, hey, jumping is kind of important in this game. It's not that important, but it's kind of important. So if you want to be able to jump, go ahead and buy this, you know, DLC or something like that, to where it gets to the point where it's going to start affecting, you know, how a game works. Because I'm just suspicious when anything like this gets introduced. All I can think about is, like, the end game of what they're trying to do. Like, eventually, they'll try and charge us to do something basic.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this reminds me of. But you said you mellowed, at least, right?
Yeah, I mellowed because I realized that you actually have to go seek this out. They don't push it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, the thing is, in-game, you can actually earn Easy Fatality coins.
Yeah, you can earn Easy Fatality coins, and if you don't have them, the Easy Fatality inputs don't appear.
So how do Easy Fatalities work?
Hold RT and press X or Y.
That's it.
And people... Okay.
It's got to be at the... at the desired distance it has to be in, and that's it.
Okay, so it's not like you could stand across a screen and
no,
you...
You actually have to be at the right zone.
Oh my god! Like that's a $5 stupid person tax.
Yeah.
Yep. Pretty much.
That's all it is.
Yeah, $5 for 30 tokens, or 99 cents for 5.
And that's why I was never too bent about it from the beginning. It doesn't change the outcome of the game at all, and it's really nothing more than an idiot tax.
Yeah, and that's why I've mellowed since this came out.
Yeah. Now, if it were easier inputs for actual moves, I would be one of the first ones reaching for the torches and pitchforks.
Yeah.
But that's not what this is.
We know how well Capcom versus SNK2 EO went over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, you know what? Pat's going to hate me for this. I would actually like to play devil's advocate for something like EO, because EO, for some people at least, can get them involved in the... Now, of course, a bunch of the crap that you do is not even possible, but at least you're giving a person an idea of kind of how the game can play. Like, I watched my son when he was, I think he was about 8, and I'm a hardcore Street Fighter fan, so, like, I almost feel obligated to support anything that Capcom puts out with Street Fighter on it, because... You know, I was there when we had the 10-year lull between Street Fighter 3 and Street Fighter 4, and so I just feel like and being involved in running fighting game tournaments and stuff like that, I feel like I have to support that kind of stuff. So I bought the DS version, the 3DS version, just because it was like, all right, this is $20. Capcom obviously needs the money. And I'm supporting Street Fighter. And then what was interesting is that I actually watched my kid play it. And he has watched me play. So even though he couldn't really get the inputs where he wanted to, especially with the 3DS and the control scheme and everything, he was actually able, for the most part, to mimic the way a lot of people play. He understood things like distance, zoning people out, anti-air, stuff like that, like basic stuff, where the barrier of entry as far as the inputs wasn't that high. And of course, you know, now he's moving on to actually let me learn how to do this, because it's not the easy way. But I could see like a case for something like that if you wanted to make it more accessible. But it's also Mortal Kombat. You're not going to have like 8-year-olds playing it. So
you shouldn't, because
you shouldn't, exactly.
Really, you will. If you want to be completely honest, you will. But.
Yeah. It's another case of that irresponsible parenting that we keep talking about on the show.
And the weird thing is, the goalpost kind of gets moved for it, because here's the thing. When I was a kid, you know, the mere sight of, you know, being violent, having blood in a video game, you know, would be controversial. You know, and the thing was, when I was about 10 or 11, you know, my parents finally decided that, you know, it's okay if you play Mortal Kombat 2, because you can tell the difference between fantasy and reality. You know, it's not real. And, you know, so that was okay. When I was doing my seasonal job over at GameStop last year, I had parents coming in to buy copies of Grand Theft Auto 5 for their 13 or 14-year-olds. And I would say, you know, well, there it is. He's like... Yeah, I would say, you know, there's the violence and stuff, right? She said, yeah, well, you know, there's also like nudity and stuff in this game, like full on polygon boobs with nipples and everything. She says, it's just polygons, right? And I said, yeah. She said, it's okay then.
What?
Yeah. That, so she, okay, so she was an awful parent, number one. But number two, like, but the thing is like what you're talking about, that's not uncommon. Like, my son. We might have talked about this last week. My son tells me constantly about how his friend's parents, like, oh, my friend Caden's, you know, his mom lets him play Call of Duty. Well, Caden's mom's stupid, because she's not looking into what she's letting you. Stupid is not the right word. I don't mean that. She's ignorant of what she's letting him play. Because, and I think maybe sometimes it happens with these parents, because they seem to still have an idea that, you know, this is all Mario Brothers. You know, even if it looks more realistic, it's all Mario Brothers. Like, I remember one of Nathan's friends was allowed to play Call of Duty. Was it Modern Warfare 2, the one that had the No Russian level? Yeah, where you slaughter all those innocent people?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an adult, and that made me incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah. And technically, you didn't have to fire a shot if you didn't want to, and they even let you skip the whole.
Yeah, but the fact that they let you skip it means they knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so, but so you expose a child to that, like, that's ridiculous. Like, at least Grand Theft, even with Grand Theft Auto, to a certain extent, Grand Theft Auto has its tongue in its cheek, and there's a wink, and there's so much. The whole game is a parody of sorts. Call of Duty and all those games play it straight. So
pretty much.
Oh God, that's awful. I don't even know where I was going with that, except I just hate stupid parents.
Yeah.
Well, we need to move on because we don't want this cast to end up being too long.
Yeah.
We ended up going over 2 hours last time. So,
yeah.
Just one last note on the Mortal Kombat thing. I'm in my own little cynical place. I'm kind of going through that personal debate of whether I should buy into it now or just wait for the inevitable premium edition to come along.
That's where I'm at.
Right now
it's got so much content right now, you could really go either way.
Yeah, but I think Pat and I have had conversations about this in the past. I know that yes, there's a lot of content, but I also know that there's a lot more coming, and then particularly as a hardcore fighting game player, you know what's missing. You know that eventually if you play the game with any sort of seriousness, you're going to want to have the extra characters to see how that stuff balances out and all of that stuff. So, you know, it's always about, and then like you don't go to a tournament these days where they're not playing a complete edition of something, or at least they have all the DLC characters. So for me, especially with the season pass being like $50, like
it's 30.
Oh, it's 30?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was still 50 because I was reading something about it the other day. Like, if you buy the game, like, I know Best Buy was doing something where if you bought the game, you could then buy the season pass and it would be 30. But I was under the impression that it was still 50. So, but yeah, it just, I'll wait 6 months and then get the version that's cheaper. That's how I am.
And me, I'm not going to Evo this year. I'm confident enough in my skills from playing Mortal Kombat 9 to not really feel like I'm putting myself at any kind of profound disadvantage when I do jump into it. But at the same time, it does look like a really solid game, so I might take the plunge sooner, maybe much sooner than later. Yeah. I'm just still internally kind of on the fence about it. I have kind of stopped and thought about picking it up pretty much each day at work for the last 5 days. But nothing has come of that yet.
Yeah. And so should we start a little thing here? How long is it going to take for Pat to pick this one up?
I'm going Tuesday.
Do you think Tuesday? I think I'll hold out until sometime week after.
We'll report back and see. Oh, we got some breaking news.
Plus, I don't even know if my Xbox Live account is still active, so there's that to think about, too.
That's irrelevant for Mortal Kombat 10.
That's right.
You can hear him cracking!
Yeah.
Anyway, a little bit of breaking news that I actually stumbled upon while we were discussing Star Wars. Over in... looks like Germany. There's been some sort of street pass news thing, sort of hinting that that The Legend of Zelda: Twilight Princess 3D is on the way.
Anybody excited by
that? That's pretty awesome.
I like what I've played of Twilight Princess, for what it's worth.
Twilight Princess basically introduced one of my favorite Nintendo characters of all time.
Midna.
And that's Midna.
See, I would play it if it came to the 3DS. I was one of those people that I spent a ton of money and time upgrading my home theater and getting the best TV I could get, best set of speakers, stuff like that, and then nothing in SD looks good on an HD TV. Nothing. And I have an old CRT, but it's not hooked up. It's in my garage. So going back to play anything on the Wii was like pouring acid in my eyes. And I know there's the emulator thing, but like I got through Twilight Princess, and the thing that actually ended up really killing me on that game was the waggle.
Yeah.
So if they could eliminate that for the – if they did do a 3DS version, man, that'd be sweet. Because I hated pretty much every game that came out on the Wii that did some alternate bullshit control scheme.
See, I got the game.
It made it worse. It wasn't like I value like being able to control what I'm doing and be accurate with it. Like going back to like what me and Pat were talking about, I play fighting games. I like to be in control. I like to be able to know exactly how I can move and the things that I can do. So flailing my arms around, you know, to get an attack to go off was terrible.
Yeah.
Well, I think you just helped me decide because I missed out on some of the Zelda games while my kid was a little bit younger, just didn't have time to play. And I think that I will pick this one up on 3DS and just skip the
the Wii version. Skip the Wii version. That's, you know, if you have a Wii, like a first gen Wii, get the GameCube version because that's actually a better version of the game.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We still have the GameCube out, but we only have the Wii U. I give the Wii to my brother.
Yeah.
Well, with Wii games, I was thinking that the GameCube version might come to Virtual Console, but since they've got Wii games on there, I'm sure that's the version they drop. God damn it.
Yeah. So, well, if you can find the GameCube version, great, but you'll probably end up paying an arm and a leg for it at this point. So mm-hmm. may as well.
What's it going for? Do you know?
It's I've seen it upwards of $90.
God damn!
Wow.
So do you guys think that Twilight Princess will be the next one that kind of gets hit with the Zelda appreciation curse? Which, if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, it's typically when a newer version of Zelda comes out, all of a sudden people that hated the old version or the previous version or two versions ago have a sudden appreciation for it. Like, I remember when Wind Waker came out, everyone acted like Nintendo pissed in their cereal. And then now you look at it today and everybody's like, Wind Waker is so beautiful. It was so good and it was so well thought out and blah, 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 blah. Like, and I wonder if the same thing is going to happen.
For the record, Wind Waker was a good game. Ended up being a good game in the long run. Yeah, and I got it when it first came out.
But if you looked at what people were saying when it came out, everybody was like, "Fuck this game!" And
Majora's Mask too. We saw it.
Yeah, they did it with Majora's Mask. Yeah. Like the last Zelda game that seemed to be critically like acclaimed without any sort of complaint was Link to the Past and the one that came out on Game Boy. God, what's the name of it?
Seriously? Are you serious? Because Ocarina of Time got freaking...
Ocarina of Time sucks.
Everyone seemed to love it.
Ocarina of Time is a terrible. But we could talk about it another time. I'm sorry, you're right. Ocarina would have been the last one, but that game was terrible. And then Majora's Mask came out, and everyone hated Majora's Mask. But now everybody's like, oh, my God, Majora's Mask is great. They did the same thing with Wind Waker. So I would not be surprised if Twilight Princess is the next one that does this.
Hmm.
Probably.
That's an interesting theory.
It's true. No, seriously. Like, if you actually go back through and you look at, like, the criticisms that people have for the Zelda games, that's exactly how it works. I mean... up through when Twilight Princess came out and then Skyward Sword, like, everyone was like, God, you know, the Wind Waker was terrible. And then now everyone loves it. So the next Zelda will come out, we'll see people start talking about Twilight Princess and maybe liking Skyward Sword. But that's how it always works. And Ocarina of Time was not a good game.
And one more thing.
I actually liked Skyward Sword.
In addition to agreeing wholeheartedly with Lee on that one, another reason that I find this whole sort of post-appreciation thing disturbing is because all of it would just be nothing more than dress rehearsal for the global fangasm that would erupt if Final Fantasy fans did eventually get their HD Final Fantasy VII remaster, which is the entire reason I don't want that to happen ever.
I think in a lot of ways, Final Fantasy VII is a halo, or excuse me, is a noose. It was a halo for Square for a long time, and it's become a noose because they are always going to be chased by the success of that game, and especially with them being a company that has been so prone to remakes, and to iterate and make updates and things like that for their remakes, there's no one that would be satisfied wholly with a Final Fantasy VII remake. Someone will find an issue with it if they ever did it. And like, if I was them, I would never do it, simply because you're not going to be able to make enough people happy. If you make changes to, you know, everyone looks at this stuff with rose-colored glasses. Like, if you go back and play Final Fantasy VII now,
I did that recently.
Yeah, like,
it didn't
Final
go well.
Fantasy VII is still a pretty decent game, but it didn't age in the way that something like Final Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy V, and VI did. Like, it didn't work that well. And then, of course, you know, at the time, I think a lot of Americans were just taken in by the fact that, like, here's this game, and it seems to have a relatively complex story, and there's all this new stuff, and then, but when you actually examine it outside of that, like, the story's not very good. Like, it's compelling because...
It wasn't well translated either. See, that's what I'd be in it for.
Exactly, but the reason that people at this point would find it compelling is because it's essentially tapping their fond memories. Yeah. And Square knows that, because if they change it too much, then it's not going to make anybody happy. So I think that's exactly why they won't do it. But I love that Final Fantasy VII reveal that they did, because that was the best case of trolling I have ever seen.
Yes.
And the thing was, is that I almost feel like it wasn't intentional. Like, they truly didn't get why people would be like, "You assholes."
Like, well, I was just sitting here with a grin that could have split my head in half.
Yeah, because I mean, they just did it, and it was so tone deaf, like.
Yeah, and it's like you could see the reaction going on. Yeah, oh,
like yeah, oh, like yeah, and they, you know, they truly
like
think they're doing something
there.
Great. You know. Oh God, yeah.
Good times.
But I think, though, if you look at that too, like as far as what they have mined for their remakes, part of me actually think that's a big reason why we haven't seen anything done with Final Fantasy VI, because for the most part, that is still one of their games that is kind of universally loved. So, and it's one of if they were going to do an update or a remake, same thing with Chrono Trigger. They're never going to remake Chrono Trigger. Those two, they'll never do anything with, simply because enough people love them the way that they were at the time, and they still hold up today, that they're not going to mess with that at all. And I would even venture to say that they might not have the talent to do it.
Yeah. The talent left.
Yeah,
exactly.
The closest they probably have would be Hiroyuki Ito. Put him in charge of a team, and he might be able to make it happen.
Yeah, but those games also, for all intents and purposes, are snapshots of a very particular time, and they don't seem. Although Square seems to be making a lot better decisions nowadays, I think though anything that we see them do as far as remakes will be something that was from the PS2 and PS3 eras, or do those sequels and stuff like that. I don't think they're going to mind much of the 16-bit stuff anymore.
Yeah. So, moving on from the breaking news, Yoshinori Ono recently rather vaguely implied that Street Fighter V is something that nobody's going to be expected to be. It's no secret that Capcom has kind of wanted Street Fighter to grow from the fighting game that it's always been into something more along the lines of a social platform, going back pretty much to the time when Street Fighter IV initially released. Not entirely certain if that's what he's alluding to, but...
Well, you know, of course, you know, again, like Pat and I are the hardcore Street Fighter guys, but I'm fascinated by the idea that Sony is helping out with Street Fighter V, simply because... By all intents and purposes, Street Fighter 4 was very successful. I mean, we've gotten a community back that had pretty much all but gone extinct, besides like the super niche, super hardcore. And so they've managed to revive that. And then I think take it to a, you know, they did it on both fronts. They did it with Street Fighter 4 and they did it with Marvel 3. But what's fascinating to me is that either Capcom is simply so inept that they are unable to do it without someone's help, or they're at the point where they truly don't realize what they have and what they've built. Like, and I say that as someone who has interacted with a lot of the guys from Capcom, like the guys from Capcom America, they get it. They truly get it. And they know what the community is about. They know, you know, the people that are there. They know the built-in audience for this. And, you know, one of the things that is still fascinating to me from an organizer standpoint is streaming. Because people stream fighting game tournaments the same way that they watch the NBA finals. I mean, they get hyped up. They have people that they're rooting for. Like, and these are people that'll never even they'll never show up to a tournament. They may play Street Fighter, you know, online. They might find the dexterity required, you know, is too high. But so moving towards a more social platform, I think will actually get those people involved. Now, to what extent is, you know, that's left to be seen. But I think Capcom realizes there is a tremendous market out there for people that are at least interested in watching this stuff and being a part of it, even if they're not necessarily playing. And I think they want to monetize those people. And I think that's where Ono's comments are coming from.
Yeah. I see probably maybe a companion app going along with it where you can just tune in to online tournaments, events, and all that stuff. Maybe even like direct live stream from Evo going into the Street Fighter V app.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, and because that's the other thing. They've depended up until this point on the community to provide that kind of support. And, you know, a lot of these streamers are work incredibly hard. But, you know, there's whenever you can have that money involved, you know, especially when they're boosting up the pot take home for these players and everything else like that. I mean, there's a lot that they could do just on the social platform, because there are people. I mean, hell, my wife has found when she would come out to Final Round, she'd watch some of it. And you know, she told me before, like, looking at some of this stuff is really exciting. And she's a person that's never going to play Street Fighter. So if they could even get, you know, a tenth of those people that at least have an interest in the stuff and get them to put some sort of money into it, you know, I think having that community built up and sort of monetizing it in a certain way, I don't think could be a bad thing, because the fighting game community doesn't have a lot of standards when it comes to how things are streamed or how things are run or anything else like that. Capcom has only recently gotten involved by doing stuff like pro tournaments, the Capcom Pro Tour, where, you know, there's a set of rules. Like, up until now, the fighting game community has done it all by itself. So Capcom getting involved and really trying to leverage the social stuff, I think, will be really interesting to see.
Yeah. Either way, I'm not entirely worried about Ono's statements, because right now it is kind of early. So, you know, best not to.
They do need to show more, though. Like, because we know
the game exists.
You know, but like showing Ryu and Chun-Li fighting, isn't anything new, and I don't think it actually looks that different from what we saw with Street Fighter 4. I also think Capcom is also very aware of how certain people were alienated by Street Fighter 3 simply because none of their favorite characters were in the game. And that was a big reason why you saw a return to form with Street Fighter 4, where all the old characters came back, because that's what people connect with. Nobody cares about Necro or Oro or anybody else like that, except people that played Street Fighter 3. So, but I would love to see them actually display something else and hopefully get some different style of play there, because I think Street Fighter 4, personally, mechanically, I don't think Street Fighter 4 is even remotely interesting. I don't even think it's a very good game. But that's a whole different story.
You know, when you were talking earlier about how, you know, Street Fighter 4 brought Street Fighter back, you know, I was a kid when Street Fighter 2 came out, and I loved it. And, you know, I got to remember, you know, the month that Street Fighter 4 came out, and everything. It was pretty much the only thing that the video game press was talking about. I remember going into a GameStop and hearing, you know, the 12-year-old, 13-year-old kids, you know, humming and singing the theme song. You know, just
it truly should not be understated how much of a behemoth, at least, you know, particularly in the 90s, that Street Fighter was. Street Fighter 2 single-handedly saved the arcades. Like, yes, if there wasn't, yeah. Now, of course, the arcades are dead now. But I mean, I remember reading the figures, like, just in terms of coin op performance, Street Fighter brought in almost $2 billion. Like, think about mm-hmm. that. Just as a comparison, The Avengers, the movie, made $1 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, that was back in the day where you had people where it didn't matter where you went. If you went into a Pizza Hut or a gas station, people would have Street Fighter II machines. Like, it was a phenomenon. And mm-hmm. And there's so many people that have those memories. Everyone knows who Ryu and Ken are. Everybody knows what a fireball and a dragon punch is. If you play games, it's culturally in your DNA for that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, and the base thing about Street Fighter 4 is it brought a whole new generation into the Street Fighter, you know, community. You know, yeah, finally,
some
you know,
the effects of that can be debatable, but
yeah. So,
well, yeah. Anyway, that can be a whole different podcast. I have a lot of hope for Street Fighter V. Just because, God, do you guys remember the old jokes? Like, Capcom can't count to originally with Street Fighter 2, it was Capcom can't count to 3, and then with 3, it was like Capcom can't count to 4. Now they've got 4, and they're gonna count to 5. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I thought that was Valve.
No, Valve it still can't count to 3.
Valve can't.
Yeah.
Project Cars.
Okay.
How do we want to package this?
So they've announced there's going to be 110 courses in, you know, 30 different locations for Project Cars. That's a lot of tracks.
Content.
Yeah.
That's how many hours of nonstop. You know, it's insane.
Yeah.
That's really cool, though.
Yeah, well, I think so, you know, slightly mad studios are gonna have to change their name to Completely Bonkers Studios because this is just. Yeesh.
How many completely batshit
brain
on?
Fuck studios?
Well, thankfully we have Blu-ray, so you know, if you can't fit it in 25 gigs.
Well, you know, it's funny talking about Blu-ray. You guys heard, like, just in terms of storage, like Grand Theft Auto shipped on like 9 DVDs. Like, yeah. It's absurd. It's like 60 gigs. Like, just one Blu-ray would have worked.
Yeah. Well, two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the retail version of Mortal Kombat, it's a 50-gig Blu-ray. And it's like, you know, 34 and a half gigs that is the install.
Mm-hmm. So it uses a good chunk of that.
Yeah. Games are getting big.
For a fighting game. Mm-hmm. And you think about story mode.
Yeah.
Well, I think too, like, the as much as we hear these developers I haven't really heard it from developers, but I've heard it from publishers. Everybody's like, you know, the publishers want so badly for us to switch to digital only, because you can't. It eliminates used copies. You know, you give them a delivery system. That's why people like EA has Origin, Ubisoft has, you know, Uplay, all that crap, but. I have a 250 gig cap on my internet, and like when you say it like that, you're like, oh wow, 250 gigs, that's a lot. But not when I have my wife in the house, not when I have my kid. My wife plays games online. I play games online. We stream stuff. We have Netflix. We have Hulu. We just got HBO now, so we can watch Game of Thrones. And we come close to that cap every month. And I actually dread turning on my PS4 and seeing how many updates are going to happen, because that's actually caused me to blow over my cap before. And with especially with these games getting bigger and bigger, like with Grand Theft Auto, like the Steam download was like 55 gigs.
Yeah,
that's insane. Mortal Kombat, same thing. Like, hell, when I did Assassin's Creed, remember? I don't know if you guys remember. There was a for the last one for Unity. There was such a big deal with how many patches came out. At one point, people just actually ended up having to re-download the entire game.
They basically overwrite the entire game, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, The Witcher ended up doing that too at one point.
Yeah, like this is going to be interesting to see that as the kind of what's going on in gaming next, because at least unless you got fiber, you're not going to be doing this stuff. Like, I couldn't go all digital even if I wanted to. Like, I don't want to simply because of, like, I like to actually own the things that I buy. But even if I did decide to do it, like, I have to worry about storage space. I have to worry about, wow, am I going to end up having to owe, Comcast $20 just to download this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's bananas. So Project Cars, especially with that many cars, and how's that even going to work?
Tracks. Well, it's going
to
be.
Tracks, yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, though.
Yeah, it's going to be big. Well. It's, going
to
be coming
it's
out.
Really shaping up to be the first legitimate competition to Gran Turismo and Forza.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a non-platform exclusive competitor at that.
So it's aimed at both of them.
Yeah. Well, three, and PC also.
So. Yeah.
Well, I think that'll be good because, I mean, you know, Gran Turismo doesn't do – they don't put the Gran Turismos out with any sort of frequency. At least Forza does. So it'll be nice to see another game in that vein, you know, have some competition.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're looking forward to Project Cars. Next comes out in May now because it got delayed.
Kind of snuck up on us.
Yeah. Now, another quick bit of news. Star Wars Battlefront trailer was released. And it's very Star Warsy and very Battlefronty, and involves explosions and AT-ATs.
Yeah, pretty much what you'd expect. Any Star Wars fan that likes this kind of game will probably get it, and other people.
Well,
just
yeah, remember it's. Well, don't forget, you know, Star Wars Battlefront. That's one of the Star Wars games that was very well liked in its day and has been fondly remembered.
Yeah, the Battlefront series was actually ahead of its time. It was essentially a multiplayer shooter that was relying on multiplayer infrastructure that just wasn't there.
Yeah, who is the designer on Battlefront 3?
DICE.
Oh shit, they're pretty
DICE.
Good.
Either that or they'll be completely broken.
Either that or be really broken for 6 months.
Yeah.
Although I have to wonder though, like especially with you know, we kind of have like this resurgence in people having an interest in Star Wars. I would not be surprised. EA knows what this will mean to their bottom line, so I would not be surprised if it actually comes out relatively polished. Because the other thing is that, I'm sure you guys are aware. Disney does not fuck around when it comes to their properties.
No, they do not.
They want to have things that have their name on it now. And, of course, you know, even back in the day with the Genesis games, like you had a bunch of Disney games that were fantastic. Disney doesn't screw
Genesis,
around when it comes to their stuff.
Old,
so.
You know, yeah.
So I imagine there might be some kind of mandate like, you know, you guys can't release this broken.
Yeah.
You assholes. No.
I mean, you know, when DICE does a game well, it is a good game. But
I think Battlefield was them simply running out of time and EA not giving them any more.
Yeah.
But
so many of these developers, I mean, you know, these guys work their asses off, and there's no way that they want to release something broken, you know. Mm-mm. But they're obviously being told to do so. So. Yeah. You know, that we should probably make sure we clarify with that.
Yeah.
So.
See, because that makes me wonder, Battlefield 4, how much of fault was that was DICE, and how much of that was just EA being the usual assholes that they are?
It was definitely EA. I mean, there's no, just like we've talked about before, you know, a delay is temporary, mediocrity is forever. And, you know, we're at the point, too, with gaming where people have enough options of the same style of game where these companies have to start seriously taking it easy. I think this last Christmas especially was the tipping point. So many people, you know, it was we had seen it kind of get released before, but so many games that were big, high profile games came out and they were broken. And I think that you're going to see consumers really react to that. And you know, when we have review embargoes and stuff that are saying, you know, well, you can't let this out of the bag until this, you know, this time, it just makes them look even worse. So
yeah,
I think especially with the Star Wars property as well, I actually think it'll probably come out the way that it's supposed to, because they also have Disney pressuring them not to screw it up.
Yeah. And Disney has generally does have really good quality control. And like you said, they don't screw around with that. So, you know, EA may try their old tricks, but they're going to have Disney over their heads. So,
yeah.
And EA may be a large entertainment conglomerate, but they are dwarfed by Disney.
Yeah, so. Disney has like the seventh biggest navy in the world.
Yep.
because they're cruise line. Like, yes, Disney is a juggernaut amongst juggernauts.
Yeah. You don't want to see
They could probably invade a country in Africa and start their own country. They just could.
It's true. There was this old, I don't know if you guys know Dave Chappelle, but I went and saw him before his meltdown, and he was talking about how he did the wrong thing at Disney World and how Mickey Mouse actually kidnapped him and then beat the hell out of him while not wearing a shirt and put a cigarette out on him. Like, he was like, you don't screw with Disney.
And I'm just over here waiting for DICE to make Rally Sport Challenge 3.
Star Wars, this new Battlefront, we know that it's going to take place during the original trilogy, and pretty much entirely the original trilogy, as far as we know. I've heard that there's going to be some character creation involved, so you will actually be able to design your own character to play as. And it's going to be, you know, both male and female. So, you know, if you watch the trailer, you know, it's not just all men.
Yeah.
Which is good. And I'm guessing, you know, you'll also be able to play a bunch of the different Star Wars races. So, you know, that's good as well. The only problem was, of course, obviously they used the in-game engine to make the trailer, but obviously it wasn't any actual gameplay. Although from what I've heard, they had a demo, but they had gameplay to show at the Star Wars celebration. So,
yeah,
you know, they just didn't release it to the public. It was only for, you know, the attendees, so we'll probably hear about that in the coming week.
Yeah. We've also got E3 to look forward to, so
there's
going to be a lot to it's going to be a stacked E3. It's just already looking that way.
Well, it definitely should be, because, you know, you don't have I've seen a lot of stuff where people are talking like, well, what are all these console makers doing for Christmas? I mean, you have a lot of stuff getting delayed into 2016, like Zelda, for instance. I would not be surprised if with the new Zelda, since Nintendo has announced that they do have another system on the horizon, the NX, that I wouldn't be surprised, you know, to go back to our Twilight Princess discussion, if Twilight Princess comes out on the Wii U and then whatever Nintendo's new console is.
Yeah.
You mean the new Zelda? Or
yeah.
Yeah, the new Zelda, the one that they've been working on, like, it's basically like Zelda Skyrim or whatever. You know, which actually, that sounds so awesome.
See, but I don't think that's where they're going with it.
No?
No. Open world can be taken a lot of different ways, and one of those ways is actually just the first few games. And so I think what they're going to do is take that original concept of just kind of dumping you into the game world, and leaving you to your own devices, instead of having 2 or 3 hours of tutorial bogging the game down. At least that's I mean,
we've heard them talk numerous times about how, I mean, even I think even Miyamoto was saying that he was impressed by Skyrim. So I would not be surprised if Nintendo's like, we can do this, and we can do this, you know, our way, and we can make something really impressive. And I also think that that might be one of those things where Nintendo is seemingly trying to evolve, because they know that's what a lot of people expect in those kinds of games now.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see, I could definitely see it your way as well. But, you know, I do think we'll end up in that situation where that game will come out on the Wii U and whatever their next console is.
So it looks like you've set up a JRPG block here.
Yeah. Yep. I figured I I have the stories there. I might as well assemble it. So that Square Enix teaser that we talked about last week has, it's been revealed. It is Star Ocean 5. It's coming to PS3 and PS4, which is a little bit of a surprise since that practice is starting to die off a bit. A few weeks ago, we talked about NIS of all companies dropping it. Square Enix staying the course. Also, Tri-Ace are the developers, and that was a little bit surprising because the last time I heard anything about Tri-Ace was them folding up.
Yeah, that's probably a similar situation to what we'll talk about later with Activision and Freestyle Games, which apparently also folded, but now is back. So, talk a bit about that later.
Do you think it's more name than anything else? Like they, like for instance, like with Star Ocean, you know, Tri-Ace has a devoted following, and they were known for a lot of things, like their systems in a lot of these games and the kind of the complexities that come with it. You know, I wonder if this kind of stuff is really just for name only because they know that there is a built-in group of consumers that would want a game from these people, even though it's not the same group.
Yeah, well, it may or may not be the same group. I mean, there's not prevention that somebody who shutters a studio can't rehire the same people and reopen it later on.
So. Right.
It sounds like they're dealing with the same people. Apparently, they were picked up by a mobile company called Nepro Japan. And they've been more or less given the green light to continue working on consoles, even though they will be utilized on their mobile branch. So apparently, it sounds like Nepro Japan acquired them because of the personnel on board they have a lot of faith in. And so all indications are that this is the same Tri-Ace as we've always known, and it's not going to be one of those in-name-only type of deals.
Let's hope they don't screw it up. So,
yeah. And meanwhile, sticking with Square Enix for a minute, Yosuke Matsuda just keeps bringing back the old IPs. This time it's Seiken Densetsu Rise of Mana, which was a mobile game that came out last year, but this time it's kind of a situation like what we were talking about last week with Breath of Fire 6. I guess they see some more potential in it, and it's headed to the PlayStation Vita.
Yeah, but Square Enix doesn't support the Vita.
Well, apparently the questionnaire didn't reflect their actual mentality, and was, you know, if that's the case, then all indications are that that questionnaire was an honest mistake as far as the omission of the PlayStation Vita.
Yeah, somebody screwed up somewhere.
So this Rise of Mana, is that
IPs coming back?
So when you say Rise of Mana, is that related to like the Secret of Mana?
Yeah, that's what the Seiken Densetsu series is. The first game was Final Fantasy Adventure and was later re-released as Sword of Mana. And then the second game was Secret of Mana. There was a Seiken Densetsu 3 that never had its own English title because it was never released here.
Yep.
Then there was Legend of Mana, Dawn of Mana, so many.
By the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game had a lot to it as well.
You can, however, if you really want to play it, get a an English translated reproduction cart. Just throwing that out there.
Mm-hmm. They reproduced
what
it with the translated wrong.
What you guys just heard is Pat shuddering.
Yep.
My Super NES is in storage, but that's a minor...
That doesn't mean anything. You can pick up the Super Nintendo from storage right after you leave the store and play Mortal Kombat 10. I mean, it's on the way, right?
Shit, it really is. Anyway. Shifting gears a little bit, Gung-Ho put out their own questionnaire this week. Very strongly implying that they're preparing to restart the Game Arts brand. And Lunar and Grandia.
Hmm.
For those of you who like space shooters, you've got Silpheed in there. A lot of good stuff from back in the day from Game Arts. And so this is definitely something that anyone invested in any of those series should absolutely fill out and, you know, submit to them. Whether this means that they're talking about remakes, re-releases, or outright new content, we have no idea. But the fact is, they're definitely kicking the tires on some kind of restoration of the Game Arts brand.
Yeah.
And they're
told you folks, the '90s didn't die. We're still in them.
You know,
and
what?
They're making a particular point of letting people know that Dokuro on Steam is a Game Arts title, which was news to me, and definitely made me look into that game some more. But
have they indicated what platforms they're looking at? Because the reason I ask is that I find it so very interesting that we're sort of having this kind of resurgence, where I also think that part of this is coming from the fact that you have companies like Xseed and Falcom have been able to get their games on Steam and have tapped into an audience that they might not have been able to get to before. I wonder if some of these companies, particularly these traditionally Japanese companies, are realizing that maybe some of these people that stopped buying their games have moved on to stuff like PCs, and that they could turn around and truly – they don't have to worry about install base numbers because everyone has a PC. There are so many people that have Steam, and they can look at this stuff and go, there is a gigantic untapped audience that we can get to here that we might not be able to by just doing the consoles. Because I would never have imagined 10 years ago we would have a ton of the JRPGs that we have on a PC. Like that is unheard of. So I'm wondering if especially with this kind of thing, this stuff will come out on console, and then eventually there will be stuff put on PC because, again, it's more money, and they don't have to worry about install base because everybody's got Steam.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's funny you should mention that, because once you get done filling out the basic demographic information on the questionnaire, the first question that you come to is, which of the following game platforms do you play on? Control-click all that apply, and mobile is on there, PC and Mac are on there, along with all your consoles and handhelds that you would expect on the list. Second question is, which PC digital distribution platforms do you use to buy games? They've got some on here I've never even fucking heard of. And so you're definitely on the right track with that line of thinking. And then what I love is when you get a little further down, which of the following Game Arts developed products have you played? This is a walk down memory lane.
And
it is brilliant. I love this entire list. Again, I didn't know about Dokuro even being a Game Arts title, but apparently it is, and so I'm definitely going to have to scoop that up at some point pretty soon. And they even name dropped Alicia Dragoon.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire Game Arts catalog is on the fucking table.
Yep.
Silpheed is on there.
Griffin looks like it's there too.
Yeah. So would you be inclined to buy a port of a Game Arts game? Which Game Arts game interests you most for a PC port? Here's an interesting one. What features do you find the most important for a PC port?
Not crashing.
Yeah, not crashing.
I love everything about this.
Yeah.
This was some of the happiest news I've ever covered on this show. And
I just the idea that I could have a platform, again, even if it just came to PC, where I could have a platform where I could play all those old games, which, you know, I own on PlayStation and I have some Saturn games, I have some Sega CD games, but the fact that one of my big issues currently is playing anything old on an HDTV just looks like shit. And I can get around that. I can get around that by playing it on PC.
You can.
You know, it doesn't require me to have any different equipment or anything else like that. And, you know, same thing, going back to tapping into markets that people know are there, but they might not be doing anything with. This could get those people. Hell, Pat, you remember Bill McNeely, who used to be with us over at Game Addicts?
Yeah.
He doesn't play. He doesn't have – he has an Xbox 360. He's not going to buy a PlayStation 4. He's not going to buy an Xbox One. He's just – he's out of that mode of gaming because of his job. But he has a computer, and he'd be the kind of guy where if that stuff was re-released on PC, he would be all over it in a heartbeat because it doesn't require him to get anything extra.
Yeah, and so, these are games that would all run really light.
Exactly. Yeah. It wouldn't be like you need to have a GeForce GTX 980 or a Titan to make Lunar run.
Yeah.
Although the system requirements would be amusing reading.
Mm-hmm.
Although about Bill, I'm not quite sure I buy that because Tony Hawk 5 is around the corner, and
they might change his mind.
That, I do think yeah. he's going to run out and acquire one or both of those systems in short order. But that's just
yeah. But I mean, there is a group of gamers that you know that do have PCs and stuff like that and might not be buying consoles anymore. Another guy that used to do that stuff with us was Carlos Harris, and he pretty much hates consoles at this point, and he does everything on the computer. And, you know, so that's the same kind of thing. This would be the kind of guy that even at a, you know, a decent price, $30 or $40, he would buy it because, like, these are games that I love. This is stuff that I want to play. This is stuff that I want to support while not, you know, necessarily wanting to support the console model.
Right. Yeah. And I was just telling Phil before the show that there have been instances like Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky. I have actually waited for it to go on sale, bought up multiple copies of the game just to distribute them to people and get them into it.
I swear I changed your life by telling you about that game.
Yeah.
It's your fault.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no.
I'm sorry, guys.
Anyway, I think what we're also seeing here is the proper use of the PC as a gaming platform because for so long there, the main games coming out for them that really defined the platform were the ones that made the most use of hardware. So if you were a PC mm-hmm. gamer, you had to stay current. Mm. Now we're seeing these waves of PC yeah. games coming that are completely changing that dynamic. And you can have a PC that maybe 5, 6, 7 years old, and you've never done anything in the way of upgrades with. And there's all these great games coming out for them that aren't going to ask any kind of upgrade of you. You just download it and you play it, and it asks so little of the hardware that it doesn't matter.
Right. And that's where the brilliance of kind of tapping this stuff comes from, because you know, even when you take a look at what's going on with indies, you know there is a group of people that desperately want to play games of that kind of vintage and of yes. that era.
Oh yeah.
You know. And so we know that for a lot of these guys, console is still their big thing. But, you know, ignoring the PC market now especially is just a folly that these companies, particularly people like Square, should definitely not ignore. Because, again, you have people that might not be buying into the console model, but they are going to have PCs. And then just like you said, it's not going to ask a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, these old IPs are coming back so frequently now. I'm starting to wonder if maybe from now on, because we keep saying over and over again that, you know, the 90s never ended. We're still very much in them. I'm starting to wonder if every time one of these new 90s IP starts coming back, we should start playing maybe just a piece of old 90s music or something.
Well, you know, it's funny talking about that, because I wonder if it's not so much that the 90s ended, but it's that people are swinging back to the mechanics of things that made the 90s memorable. I mean, when you look at a lot of gaming now, like, you know, so much of gaming, and one of the big reasons, and I know Teresa could probably agree with this, since she has kids and all that, one of the big reasons mm-hmm. that mobile took off is because mobile in a lot of ways truly actually respects the time that you have to put in it. A lot of games out there today yep. do not. Where, you know, if I have to carve out 2.5 hours to get anywhere in a game, I probably just won't play it because that's just not how my life works anymore. But whereas, like, if I want to play a game of Hearthstone, I can do that in 10 minutes. and still yep. have a pretty decent rewarding experience come from it. So a lot of games, at least for me in the 90s, they didn't pile up bullshit tutorials or anything else like that. Like, here's 30 different ways that you need to be able to do this. They didn't have a 10-hour hand-holding session. You just got right to it, and you could play it, and you could do what you wanted with that time. And so, and I think you see that with a lot of these indie games where there's not a lot at the front. You know, you just go in and you start to play. And I think I have to wonder, especially with the indies coming out so big and then us seeing these kinds of revivals, if that is partially also due to the mechanics. Because I think a lot of people are tired of the way that AAA games play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think by extension, I would say that, you know, so much stuff since the 90s has proven to suck asshole that it's only natural to go back to that and see, you know, where did we fuck up? Where did things go wrong? And where did games or media in general just make that bad evolutionary step that we need to correct?
Yeah.
And so.
Well, and I think, too, you know, a lot of that comes from the fact that a lot of these companies, when they get bigger, they thoroughly invest in middle management, because when you have so many teams working with so many people, you know, there has to be somebody kind of like steering the ship. And then those people, the person steering the ship has to have people reporting to him about, you know, other people that are doing other things. And I think that's one of the things that the video game industry has sort of had a lot of trouble adapting to. And because, you know, if I'm sure, and I'm sure you guys could probably agree with this, I've played some games, just off the top of my head, some that I could think of that came from the last generation was something like Kingdoms of Amalur or Darksiders 2, where it was obvious the people that worked on these games did so and they compartmentalized, because the quality of the game goes up and down. But then when you play something like that as a whole, you sit there and wonder, did anybody actually play this game front to back, or did they just play their section? Because there's so many games out now that are very disjointed experiences simply because there's so many people working on them. And
it becomes a rhetorical question.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, like, you know, what we were talking about last week with, like, one of the beauties of Axiom Verge is how singular it is. It's just one guy's vision, and he worked it exactly how he wanted to. And it's a dream to play just because of that.
Yep. Right. So, sticking with the theme still, we got one more item. It's E6, the Ark of Nepishtim, coming to PC next week. Not quite in the form you might remember if you played it on PS2 or PSP back in the day. Mm. It's getting some new difficulty settings to bring it more in line with the other games in the series that have come since. It's getting an Exceed translation instead of the original Konami translation. It just seems like, the difficulty settings as well, addressing complaints about how easy the original version was. This one's definitely going to put the emphasis on actually learning boss strategies and not just hoarding up a bunch of curative items to heal you as your Rochambeau the bosses.
Mm-hmm. Although, you know, you will have that option. It's not gonna
you will have the option. It's remaining in the game, but they are letting you opt out of it if you want to play it more like a proper ease game. Yeah. That has sprung up in its wake, has played. It's coming a week from Tuesday. That'll be the 28th at the price of $19.99. And so anyone loves their action RPGs, look forward to it.
On that price, it's going to be 15% off for the first week. So people who are really interested in it, it might be me, first week is a time to buy.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, Exceed just does this so well.
They do.
They're one of the, I think.
Well, they know their audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
They put out a good game, and they don't charge an arm and a leg for it.
They're one of the, I think, one of the few companies out there that not only knows their audience, but also is aware of the market that they exist in. You know, I have been we've talked about this before, and I've had this conversation with Pat numerous times. I don't really ever buy games full price anymore because it's just a time issue for me. So even having some kind of discount up front makes me much more inclined to try and get something day one rather than knowing that, you know, a lot of these companies would try to charge me on the back end if they could. Yeah. So that's going to be one of those games that I'll just pick up. I probably won't play it for 6 months, but it's like they had the goodwill to put it out there, the goodwill to discount it as well. Why not?
Yeah. And what I love about this is not only the fact that Exceed is making a habit of that initial discount with a lot of their games that they roll out. Another thing that I love about this is they're taking the PC version of a game that has already been localized and released in the North American market, applying their own translation, and throwing in a bunch of stuff that people wanted. Does this put the Legend of Heroes Gagarv trilogy on the table? From the same situation, the ridiculous, stupid translation that Bandai Namco gave it, you know, kind of relegated to PSP at this point because it was an obscure game on a platform that didn't get the market penetration that it needed. Could those three games maybe find new life on the PC through Exceed?
I wouldn't doubt it at this point.
It seems like something that's only natural for them to acquire right now. We'll see how it goes.
Once they finish that Trails trilogy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. Once they finish that trilogy, there's another two game set, and then another two game set after that. And,
yeah. So we'll be waiting a little while.
And whatever else comes after that. But they have other teams that they can put on, say, the Gagarv trilogy or... they had one person localize E6, just for reference on that. Mm. So they definitely have options, but that would just be something that's really nice to see. And then another little news item that before we get into some heavier stuff here, Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, huge success for Capcom. They're getting those Western sales that they wanted with it. They've just hit the 1 million mark. I don't have Japanese numbers, but you know they're going to be obscene as always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the smart thing that they did with this one was bundle it with a 3DS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even though it's nearly impossible to get that version.
Yeah, it's impossible to get that version because they sold a million copies.
Yep. Well, and it also shows that Nintendo is serious about trying to make, you know, this a hit in the West, which, you know, I think you could argue maybe Sony was not.
Yeah.
And Nintendo especially is in sort of a precarious position where, you know, even for third party stuff, you know, they need the hits, you know. And so having something like this, I think is definitely good for them. And then particularly the mobile platform, because, you know, we don't know where handheld gaming is going to go in the future with the advent of tablets and everything else like that. You know, we talked about Fantasy Life last week where, you know, the Fantasy Life 2 isn't even going to be coming out for the 3DS. So, you know, seeing a game like this do well on the 3DS really makes me happy because it makes me think that we'll get more. And Nintendo, again, has a vested interest in trying to keep that gravy train going.
Yeah. Good.
And Capcom themselves definitely need the hit.
Yeah.
And this is quickly looking like another big franchise that they can, you know, get a lot of mileage out of with stuff like Mega Man not coming anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
While they figure out what to do with that. So
it seems like they get a lot of business with Monster Hunter, the whole franchise. Yeah. I noticed I have a home pass set up, so I get street passes from all over the world, and it is Monster Hunter everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everyone seems to have it.
Yep.
You're gonna have to show me how to do that.
Oh, I will show you to a Google document that will set you up.
That'd be great. My son will lose his mind.
Yeah. All right, so one of our main stories this week. So this was something that had gone on last week, but we really didn't think that it was going to develop into much of a story. Just a second. I got Brandon here on the text.
Yeah, it looks like he said that it dropped.
Yeah, I think it dropped. It bumped me off for a second, but I can hear you guys now. So,
okay.
Yeah. No worries. So, false alarm.
Skype happens.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Natural Resources Defense Council took issue with the way that the always on kind of sleep mode auto update feature was implemented in the Xbox One. Went to Microsoft about it, told them it wasn't being implemented as efficiently, or the option to turn it off wasn't as prominent as it needed to be. And so Microsoft went in and fixed that. On initial setup, it lets you opt in or opt out of it depending on whether or not you find those features useful or not. Now the NRDC is coming back basically complaining that Microsoft didn't do enough to fix things, even though what they really did was basically what they were asked to do.
Yeah, well, they're complaining about the wording and saying that the it doesn't highlight the positives of disabling the always on. The only positive is energy saver, and that's in the title. I don't think you really need to explain that much more than.
Yeah.
You
know,
well, but part of the reason too is that Microsoft still has units that have Kinect, and if you don't have it set up for the instant on, none of the voice commands work.
Yeah.
Right.
So they're not going to go, oh, well, you can turn it off and get these energy saving features, and, you know, in place of, you know, you making the system work in a way that we don't feel like it should.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, if you turn it on, if you turn it, that feature off, then the Xbox on doesn't. God damn it.
That's exactly what happens when you realize it's not on.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you realize it is, in this case.
So Phil, are you going to be looking into those energy savings?
No, because this is a thing I actually use. I use the voice commands every day.
Oh, obviously.
Sometimes unintentionally.
So, my issue with this is it seems like Microsoft kind of gave an inch, and the NRDC is demanding them to hand over the ruler. And that's
pretty much,
regardless of the spirit of their position, regardless of what the situation is, you know, that they're crusading for. This wasn't smart. If they ever go to Microsoft again asking about some kind of energy saving features or anything, Microsoft will be well within their rights to tell them to go fuck themselves now.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, they'll treat them just like they've treated their customers.
And you can actually call this Patrick's Law. If someone proves impossible to please, it's not worth wasting the energy, the focus, the time, in the effort. So it seems like if the NRDC ever wants to make a demand of Microsoft again, you know, why would they dignify it with a response?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is really going to go anywhere. And honestly, I didn't even know that this was an issue because in Canada, that was always an option at setup.
Yeah.
Phil, what you're not understanding is from an American perspective, this is about freedom.
Yeah.
Okay? And we know like Canada doesn't love freedom. So
you bunch of commie bastards.
Not the way that
with your maple American syrup and your free health care.
Exactly. You guys aren't American with an American company giving you the freedom to waste energy, okay? That's all this is.
And the numbers that the NRDC put forth, and says, it seems like the NRDC is acting like it's Microsoft's responsibility to bludgeon their customers on initial startup with a comprehensive education in energy consumption and all the math associated with it, when really they probably just want to sit down and play some Killer Instinct.
Yeah, and
so it just really seems like they're out of touch with the audience, with the industry as a whole, really. And the numbers that they put up in terms of how much worth of energy you would be saving over the course of the life of the system was pretty laughable.
Yeah, wasn't it like $7 a year or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, $7 a year.
I think it, for me, it's worth $7 for me to scream at my Xbox. And
yeah, but no. Playing devil's advocate, as an environmentalist, people would probably say that $7 for you times, you know, millions of other people equals a whole big shit ton of
greenhouse gas. Yeah, but my response to that would be, why do you hate freedom?
And no, I do see your point. Hate Mother Earth?
See,
you some kind of communist or something?
No, I absolutely agree. Like, you, when you take the numbers and you multiply them in that sort of factor, like, it makes a huge difference. But it's antithesis to the way Microsoft wants that console to work, and that's exactly why they're not pimping it. They're not putting it out there because, you know, again, when you put it in that mode, it stops the Xbox from recognizing voice commands.
Yeah. You're shutting also, off selling points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also stops the Xbox from updating itself.
Yeah. And don't forget, I mean, for almost over a year, Microsoft doubled down on Kinect being something that was valuable.
Yeah.
So they're not going to turn around and further kind of throw in the towel on it and go, well, yeah, you know, make this thing stop working completely and save yourself $7.
Yeah. Well, you got the choice now, so.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah. I bet a lot of people are going to take that choice, and it just, you know, it kind of bothers me that they just did what the NRDC requested of them, and that wasn't good enough for them. Yeah. And, you know, I say this as an environmentalist too, and this is something that I kind of get pissed off at my own site about. Basically, feeling like because we're fighting for the right cause means we get to bypass having to socially navigate all of these companies, all of these entities that we're dealing with, and just go in there like we own the place and make demands. And anyone who disagrees with us or dismisses us out of hand is the devil. And in fact, if you want to make some progress toward better energy efficiency, maybe you could start by not alienating people who don't start from a position of fuck you. You know, if the ruler isn't open for negotiation, then just start collecting inches wherever you can find them.
Yeah.
And not piss off the people who are offering them up.
Well, does the NRDC have any legislative authority?
That's the punchline. That's the punchline. No. So Microsoft would be well within their rights to just say, who the actual fuck are you?
But see, but to be fair with that, Microsoft is actually a company that actually strives for green things, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I know their buildings are certified, so they're never going to tell those people to screw off, but,
I mean, they're a watchdog agency. That's really what they do. They have to take this hard-line approach, even if it seems a little bit unreasonable. That's
right.
Kind of their MO.
Yeah.
And Brandon dropped again.
Oh, yeah. No.
I'll call him back.
Are we talking for a minute here, or are we going
to... Moving on to our last item. Did you have anything to add, Teresa? Or
No. Go on ahead.
Okay. Activision, we knew this was coming when Rock Band was announced. Now, we know Guitar Hero Live is on the way this year, and there are a few more changes in store than we've seen for Rock Band.
Yeah, this wasn't just a cosmetic shift here. They're actually doing some pretty significant gameplay changes to the formula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so you guys know, I got knocked off a second ago. So
yeah, no, we got you.
Sorry.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about Guitar Hero now, right?
Yeah, Guitar Hero. Like, I don't know if you guys have actually seen it, but I actually did some reading up on this week, and one of the biggest changes is not just the way they're doing the fretboard, but the fact that they removed colors from the buttons.
Yeah.
Apparently, they did some studies where the colors, like seeing the colors as well as, you know, knowing what you have to press and having it on the kind of like the chord highway or whatever it was called. Yeah. It actually, for some people, it was overwhelming because their brain was also trying to
process
the colors as well as where they needed to go and stuff like that and what they needed to press. And some people just found it overwhelming. So doing away with that is a significant change. And apparently when they did do away with that, they saw people's ability to play the game jump tremendously.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that, because that's actually something that bothered me when I played it, and I didn't put two and two together until I had actually read that, because I would think I'd go red, Groot, which is weird because I don't do that with fighting games or anything else like that. But for whatever reason, having that in front of me and having, you know, knowing what I have to hit and then knowing the color and everything else like that, it did something.
Well, you know, I play a little guitar myself, and this is much closer to what the actual experience is like. Because
it's like,
you
know,
you don't just
I do wonder how they're gonna note bar chords on this game. Yeah, because if
your mom, that's their answer to that. Your mother.
Well, you know, so I don't know how they'll do that, but you know what else is really interesting about this? Like, again, like, I don't know if you guys have seen the info for it, but, you know, they're apparently going to try and launch this on everything. They're going to launch it on mobile, because from what I understand, the frets and everything else like that, that's all video. So there's not really a high barrier as far as technology required. So my understanding is that they're also going to be able to fire this up on mobile platforms and make it tappable and stuff like that. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with this, because they seem to really be poised to just try and hit every single market that they can, because they don't really have to worry about the technology side of it, because every device out there can stream a video, and then all it has to really do is just match up the inputs.
Yeah. Now, this is going to do huge on iOS and Android.
It is.
It's the kind of game that you could see a lot of people sitting around at a bus stop waiting for their bus to come in, just, you know, tapping away on their phones.
Yeah, same thing, just taking that time.
I mentioned the My Little Pony game that I've been playing, and it has a variation on this. So one of the Equestria Girls games of it, it looks very similar to Guitar Hero.
One thing I have to say is that this version of Guitar Hero seems to have an unprecedented awareness of its own cultural significance.
Yeah. It also seems to be very well aware of the mistakes it made.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, also, like, I mean, from what I understand, too, they aren't doing, like, there's no DLC for this. It's just going to be the disc that you get or whatever version you get. That's how it's going to be. And then they'll do updates and stuff later, but they aren't going to do the Rock Band model of, like, you just have this whole catalog of songs. Like, one of the other things that I saw when I was reading about this was, since some of it is video, is that you might come in and halfway through a song, or you might have to wait till the next one. So they're going to fundamentally change how people play it as well. So I do think it'll be huge, but I wonder if it's also going to be huge and alienate the people that love the original.
Yeah, that's, I think, really going to depend on the song selection that they end up going with, because it seemed like Guitar Hero seemed to skew more to the hard rock metal type crowd, whereas you know, Rock Band was more varied. This one here seems to be a lot more light, from what I'm seeing.
With the three songs that we've seen, anyway.
Yeah.
Which I think are fantastic choices, by the way. But that's the interesting thing about it, is that there was a bit of genre dissonance between the two of them, the two franchises before. Now it seems like they're aiming to occupy entirely different spaces altogether.
And that's smart, because that's how you that's how you avoid market saturation, is by, you know, finding a niche.
Yeah, it's almost like they had conversations beforehand that, yeah, this is what we're going to do. We're going to roll them out at the same time, but this is where we want to go with this, and, you know, because they were stepping on each other's toes all over the place.
Yeah,
and not just in the healthy competition kind of way, but the, like you said, market saturation.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's an incredibly smart move to make, simply because we are an industry at this point that is dealing wholly with the results of just oversaturation for every type of game, with the exception of the more niche titles. So them doing something like this is absolutely the best thing that they can do for their long term, because they're not going to be cannibalizing their own market, and they're not going to have it cannibalized from another person who's essentially on the, you know, on that level making the same kind of game. So this is absolutely, this is definitely the best thing that they could have done. And it's a differentiator too, just at the core of it. Like, you know, Rock Band is still that game that you're playing at a party with your friends. You know, this can be more of a, I just want to fire this up and play it for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then, you know, it eliminates the either or conundrum that you had before, you know. Now you really do have legitimate reason to buy both.
It's true.
You know, I'll say this about Guitar, I've said this before about Guitar Hero and Rock Band, and I'll say it again. Whatever mistakes these games made, they were the best thing to happen to rock music in years, because they brought back all of these old awesome songs that, you know, up until then you'd only hear on classic rock radio, and introduced them to a whole new generation.
Yep.
And gave a lot of musicians a lot of exposure to a lot of fans who were not ready for them.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, just the whole, you know, just without Guitar Hero, most of us probably would have never heard of Dragon Force, you know,
I won't go there.
Pat, you don't count.
Yeah, you don't count.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have
newest album. It's actually really good. So,
So it seems like we're kind of we're bullish on Guitar Hero Live.
We are.
Yeah,
at least.
Yeah, I think it's just
and on Rock Band 4, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely segments of the market now at this point which are sort of underrepresented, and they became that way simply because of the oversaturation. So this is a good time to relaunch it. And again, like, you know, if you keep in those mobile platforms, oh my God, like, just, it's going to make so much money. It's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's the it's going to be the cultural phenomenon that it was last time, and, you know, from the looks of things,
it can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing
about this time.
Yeah. Well, the fact that we're not dealing with you know, ancient guitars and things of that nature from from the last Guitar Hero game, is already a positive thing. Yeah. I actually wanted to touch on a little bit on the presentation that they're going for this particular. This particular game, they're going first person, and that, you know, permeates every aspect of the game, including the audio that you're going to be hearing. It's all positional, which is really cool. You know, you move up. It's like your character moves up close to the drums. The drums are going to be louder. You move up to the crowd, you're going to hear the crowd singing. You're going to hear more of them.
That's fascinating. What a cool!
I didn't think they were going to take it that far.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Get to live out your rock star fantasy.
Yep.
And imagine how that's going to be like when you finally get to be able to play like a big stadium.
Yeah, they're going to be doing that campaign mode. They haven't really touched too much on it.
That's actually just a great idea from a sensory experience. I wouldn't have even thought about that yet. Because imagine what it sounds like when you're doing a small club compared to like a stadium.
Yeah. They didn't hint this as. Didn't really say it specifically, but I do have a feeling that Guitar Hero Live will eventually support VR.
That would make sense.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Especially as soon as it's coming.
Yeah. You can see this on Morpheus without too much trouble.
Man. Yeah, we're gonna be getting those VR headsets probably within the next 12 months, and so that falls well within range.
God, I can just imagine it now. Being in the middle of that big old stadium going, "Come on everybody, don't stop. Believe."
Any final thoughts before we wrap this puppy up?
I think I'm good.
I think we got a show.
Yeah, I do too.
All right. Well, with that, I'm Filippo Genolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Lee Lamb.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And we'll see you all next week.
America!